Investable Universe is about thematic topics in real assets investing. This is what we mean by the global market of things: real estate, infrastructure, land, energy, and other commodities that have historically been viewed as boring old income investments. But take a look at the shifts underway in these asset classes, from industry disruptors to new investors to emerging markets to geopolitics, and you'll find these assets are very interesting. We'll talk about private equity, venture capital, corporate VC, sovereign wealth funds, listed markets, crazy startups, some old guard investment firms, some maverick entrepreneurs, and some paradigm-shifting technologies. One thing is certain, no corner of the global market of things will be left untouched by the changes happening right now, and that's what we talk about on this podcast. So today we're going to do a deep dive on the digital assets space, from crypto to blockchain to the more recent emergence of niche tokenization assets like NFTs, non-fungible tokens. NFTs have grabbed headlines recently after some very large transactions in the space. Listeners may recall an art collage by the artist Beeple, which sold for $69 million, and Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey's first ever tweet for $2.9 million. Is there a future for institutional investment in digital assets? Are NFTs a fad or a foretaste of the future of asset digitalization? And how might tokenization itself affect real assets? So these are big questions, and we need an expert source to break it down. For insights, I've got a very illustrious expert indeed, futurist Ben Way. He is a tech entrepreneur and venture investor many times over, and is the CEO of Silicon Valley venture advisory and startup hothouse, The Rainmakers, built as one of the world's first incubators and credited with fast-tracking 204 companies to date. The company has advised the executive office of the President of the United States on the rollout of UTMS technology, has worked with the Microsoft Innovation Team on software as a service and other offerings. And besides his work with Rainmakers, he's launched a new company called TokenMaker, which is a platform where users can create their own tokens and NFTs with no coding experience. Ben, thank you for joining Investable Universe today.
It's a pleasure. Great to be here.
This is going to be an interesting conversation because this is obviously, these are bold new frontiers opening up in digital assets. So first, I want to start with the NFT question. So non-fungible tokens. As I recall, when Bitcoin was sort of just getting started, the knock on Bitcoin was that it's not worth anything because it's not fungible. You can't use it for anything. And this was, you know, this was sort of the debate over cryptocurrencies was what you could really use them for. So now we've got non-fungible tokens, which are by definition non-fungible. Why would I want a non-fungible token?
So I think I always like to bring it back down to analogy of kind of like back in the history of gold, right? So The reason why cryptocurrency at the beginning was considered more kind of non-fungible is a bit like gold at the beginning. You couldn't compare a nugget of gold to another nugget of gold. They were unique. They had to be weighed, and there had to be some kind of translator, a market in the middle to value that. Mm-hmm. What happened was our society were like, wow, okay, we could turn this gold into these things called coins, and these coins could all have a certain size, weight, shape, and value. Mm-hmm. And so gold became from effectively non-fungible to fungible. Now, and what we've done with cryptocurrency is almost the same, is that at the beginning, it wasn't really, Bitcoin wasn't really fungible because there was no kind of marketplace where you could assign a value to them. That has now changed. Mm-hmm. Now, in a weird way, we're kind of going backwards and going, well, there's all these things that have value, but we don't know necessarily how much they're worth because they're all unique. So let's give them the potential all to have a unique value because they're all different. And that inherently is what makes them non-fungible. Just like one painting isn't worth the same as another. Mm-hmm. A non-fungible token is exactly that. It's a unique piece of value, as it were.
So even though an NFT represents a unique asset, it must have some value that's expressed in other, whether it's dollars or Bitcoin or some other cryptocurrency, right? I mean, it's an NFT, but its value is expressed in terms of some other fungible currency, right?
Exactly. It's the conversion from the inherent value of the NFT, which, you know, I mean, it all comes down to something's only worth what somebody's willing to pay for it, right? Mm-hmm. So, but that needs to be expressed in a fungible a fungible way. And I hate this word fungible. It's A, such an ugly word, and so B, so bloody confusing. But basically, you know, that's what happens is you're converting a unique piece of asset into a fungible value, whether that be Bitcoin, Ethereum, US dollar, whatever else it may be.
All right. So let's talk a little about the Beeple NFT and what it may portend for the use of, say, digital monetization or digital technologies in art, as well as other fine arts applications. Because I've heard that. So NFTs, let's just talk a little bit about whether the NFT is significant because it allows an artwork to be traded in a specific way, or does it have something to do with establishing the ownership change, or both?
I think it's a bit of both. I think overall, what people forget with crypto overall, NFTs, or the you know, why we're doing all of this, is inherently why it's interesting is that it makes the process of or the value chain more efficient. That's what we're actually. It's all about efficiency at the end of the day. So rather than, you know, having a dozen experts work out whether a piece of art is worth X, Y, and Z, and then those experts take their cut, and then the auction house comes in and says, okay, we'll list it. And when, you know, that whole process, you're losing maybe 20-30% of something's value just in the inefficiency of a process. That's where NFTs become interesting, is because what it does is effectively cut out the middleman, just like Bitcoin and Ethereum cut out the banks. And so what we're seeing is this, you know, if you cut it down to kind of pure efficiency and energy, that's why this is interesting. Why, even though we, you know, it's in a hype cycle right now, overall in the long term, it should build significant value. Just like at the internet. I remember at the beginning of the internet, I was right there at the beginning, and I remember people telling me what I was crazy. In fact, my father told me that people would never buy anything on the internet. and it's the same with Bitcoin. It's you know, it's not, you know, where it will be in 10 years is completely different from where it is now. It's it's not about where it is, about where it is now. It's about where, you know, what, why does the technology exist, and what's the bigger picture.
So I've also heard from just sort of out in the ether that the music industry is a suitable use case for NFTs. Why?
For exactly the same reason. It's efficiency, right? So, you know, at the moment, if my girlfriend is actually, or my fiance, I should say, is actually a DJ, right? And she produces a song, and then she has to send it to a label. And then she needs to then put it on platforms. And then, by the time the final end user buys that piece of music, you've lost probably 20-30% of its value. And this is the interesting thing, is music is just one case, art is just one case. There are, what's actually interesting about the NFT space is not what's obvious right now, it's actually the edge cases. Things like local government compliance and management, things like ticketing, things, you know, anything where you have something of distinct value and you want to make it more efficient, is a place where NFTs can add a significant amount of value.
You know, when I think of the music industry in particular, you think, okay, so up until, let's say, the 90s, or even up until the sort of turn of the century, musicians and labels, or musicians and an artist had maybe an ambivalent, shall we say, relationship, often fraught relationship with labels and with management. And so there was that relationship. And then the internet came along and sort of disrupted that relationship. Then you had, you know, downloading of songs, moving into streaming. The artists were basically getting pinched that way. You know, they don't get paid when something gets, you know, or like a fraction of a penny when something gets downloaded. So they're kind of getting the short end there again. And then COVID comes along and disrupts live performances. And so then there's that obstacle. Do you think that NFTs have sort of emerged as a way that artists can finally get theirs? Because it seems they've been on there.
I think the other very powerful thing about it is that it also gives the artist, whoever is, you know, whoever owns that NFT or that piece of content, it gives them entire control over mm-hmm. how that piece of content is consumed. And what you're going to see is the total upending of kind of copyright, of how value and is distributed through these NFTs, because it mm-hmm. you know you couldn't, but before, as an artist, you couldn't possibly hope to manage all the end cases of all your users, so you had to trust music labels and managers to make those decisions for you. But the cool thing about NFTs is you can define how you want your music or your art or anything else consumed at any level, and that is your right. And artists have never had that level of control over their own work.
Yeah. So you talked about, obviously, giving artists and producers, let's say content producers, intellectual property holders, control over the way that their work is disseminated and used. You also talked about the efficiencies that are generated through an NFT. So in terms of the NFT's contractual relationship or the technology, who wins and who loses in this new NFT landscape?
I think it's quite easy in that sense. I think the winners are going to be the artists and mm-hmm. musicians and anybody else who adopts this technology very early on, and the losers are going to be the established players who don't adopt this technology. And unfortunately, the reality is that a huge number of businesses exist because they manage inefficiencies in the system. They inherently exist because the process is inefficient. Just like the internet, like, decimated, you know, masses of businesses mm-hmm. By making communication and information freer and more accessible. But in the same way as the internet, it will also generate huge amounts of opportunity for companies to come in and build new technology to help this new world.
So I've heard it said once again in the NFT ether, just on, you know, online and in, you know, various podcasts, et cetera, in media, that what NFTs mean is the separation of digital rights from monetization. What does that mean? Because I thought holding digital rights was monetization. What does that mean to split those?
It is. You're correct. You're absolutely correct. It's a very hard thing to find. But basically, what it's saying is that before, if you paid for a certain piece of content, you had a certain level of inherent rights based upon what you were buying. Mm-hmm. The changes with an NFT is that the artists control those rights regardless of what you're paying. I.e., if an artist is written into a smart contract that you cannot stream this publicly, mm-hmm. Then a piece of technology that streams things publicly won't play this song because it can't. Mm-hmm. So it allows you to disconnect the kind of smart contract, the structure of the rights from the monetization, but they are inherently connected. I don't see them as completely disconnected. What I think a more accurate way of describing it is it's kind of, it allows much more clarity between the two.
Mm-hmm. So are NFTs so far exclusively being issued on the Ethereum blockchain? Because I hear that association, that NFTs are written on Ethereum. Is that true?
No, that's not true. Ethereum is kind of the poster child for NFTs right now. Token Maker itself supports Binance and other chains. And I think what you're going to find is, because of the cost of Ethereum, you're going to find other chains becoming a lot more popular because the cost is a fraction of what is on Ethereum. I think today, you know, if you want to mint an NFT, it's like $40, and on Binance, it's kind of like $3 or mm-hmm. even less. And that's something we're trying to do at Token Maker, is make it much more accessible so the NFT the person building the NFT can have more choice in the cost and the flow of what they want to do.
So let's talk then about Token Maker, your newest initiative. Like, when did you launch, and how long did it take you to sort of get your model together? And talk a little about that story.
Yeah, so it's actually a funny story. I have worked with the CEO of Token Maker for almost 20 years. He's one of my oldest partners in business. We have built, dozens of technologies, some of them highly successful. We built and sold the largest language learning website in the world. We sold that to Bubble 45 years ago. And about 3 years ago, Nick started building Token Maker. And I was building another technology at the time in the crypto space. And Nick's Token Maker did very well. And we started generating, tokens that have, turned into market caps of billions of dollars.
Wow.
And about 6 months ago, he talked to me and said, look, I really like what you've done with your crypto company. Would you allow us to acquire it? And I was like, well, as long as the value is there for all our investors and stakeholders. Mm-hmm. And so he acquired our crypto company, and then I became part of the management of Token Maker. And we want to be, the easy way to describe Token Maker is we want to be the picks and shovels of the crypto industry. We're not interested in the hype or the gold rush. We're interested in just providing really stable, reliable tools to the market. Mm-hmm. And so we can, we do token generation. We're just about to launch a whole NFT white label platform. Oh. So other people can build marketplaces for all kinds of different things. So it's, that's how we're going out to market. And Nick is, one of the, I would say, probably the most talented technical human I've ever met. So we're in good company, as it were.
Yeah. So when people create a token, well, let's talk a little about what's the user experience on Token Maker? People go to your website and they open an account and they can launch a coin with, whatever they want, or
yeah,
how does it work?
It's literally no coding token generation. So you can literally go on, you can type in, basically set up your variables, click generate, and mm-hmm. you will have 100 million of your own tokens.
100 million. Can you control the amount that's
10 million,
issued?
1 million, 1,000, whatever you mm-hmm. put in, you can have. That's the beauty of token generation. It's all you control everything, mm-hmm. and so you do, and then you can transfer those assets into a wallet, and you can distribute them, or you can sell them if you're doing an ICO or something. Yeah. It's really, it sounds almost unbelievably simple, but that's how we've tried to make it, is so that it's accessible to as many people as possible.
So when people sort of open an account on Token Maker, create a token, are they typically creating it for some other application? Like, they have a video game or something that has its own currency, or there's a retail site that they want to, what is the typical motivation of someone opening? Are they doing it just to see what it's like? What's the typical strategy?
I think there's different types of people that come on our platform. I think there was definitely a lot of people that come on our platform who just want to understand the process. Yep. And we actually have a kind of free option mm-hmm. That allows them to play with the system without actually having to spend any money. But a lot of our customers just want to, just build their own token. They want to generate, like you said, an in-game, an in-game currency or something else that they've imagined that they want to add value to. And we've had many of those, and many of those have been successful. Like I said, one of our tokens has got a market cap of over $1 billion.
Wow. Are you seeing primarily US users, or can you talk a little about the geographic distribution of your account holders?
Yeah, I mean, we're all over. A lot of US, a lot of European. I mean, you know, the company, you know, we operate obviously worldwide. But yeah, I mean, I think those are two major concentrations, is Europe and the US.
So then, just from a regulatory standpoint, once an account holder, let's say, launches a coin, are they then subject to commodities trading regulations here in the U.S.? Because I know that crypto
that's the million dollar question. Yeah. I mean, you know, we are right at the beginning of this journey of regulation, and you know, there's a lot of open questions about how these things will be treated. What I would say is that generally regulatory bodies, are pretty flexible, as long as you're not hurting people, or you're not taking advantage of people, you're not scamming people, or you're not, you know, taking people's money. Mm-hmm. If you take somebody's money and you don't deliver value, then, you know, that's what they're there for, right? They're there to stop, you know, people taking advantage. And so, you know, as a founder or anybody else who wants to generate tokens or NFTs, you know, I would just say be careful and you know, understand your fiduciary duty to deliver value to whoever whoever you're trying to work with.
So you mentioned that one client of TokenMaker has issued a coin, has created a coin that's now got a market capitalization of over $1 billion. What's the most compelling or innovative use case for a crypto coin that you've seen to date?
There's actually one. I'm not sure whether I'm actually allowed to talk about it too much, but I'll try and beat around the bush a little bit.
Okay.
but we have one that is in the live action animal sports area. I can't tell you
live
what animal.
Action animal sports. Okay.
but they want to turn animals into an NFT where you can have value in the animal that is in some kind of competition, let's say, and you know, if that animal does well, and you know they, you know, the value of that animal NFT increases in value. Mm-hmm. You know, which is like one of the weirdest ones we've heard. But you're gonna see hundreds of edge cases like that. It's like, uh-huh. You know, there's, you know, I quite like the governance component of it. I like the more kind of structural, financial mechanics side, but that's probably because I'm a bit nerdy.
Oh. Can you talk at all about who your investors in the private market have been? I mean, are you getting interest from fintech-oriented VCs? Any corporate VCs interested?
Yeah, well, we're very lucky in the fact that, you know, we've been profitable from day one, and mm-hmm. We're not, you know, we are going out to market, but we're in no desperate rush to. Mm-hmm. We have had a fund called Sarsen Funds invest in us, which is great. But we are just starting that journey. We're not, we're not going to market. We're not going out to the market and doing a massive kind of ICO or anything at this point, but we may do.
So you mentioned that some kind of promise for NFT and blockchain applications with regards to governance, and maybe some of these edge cases might be that those might be the more compelling use cases for this kind of technology. You know, do you think that these that meme cat NFTs or kind of these silly headline grabbing NFTs are like a test balloon for something a little more down to earth?
I mean, literally right now in the peak of a hype circle, that's what's going on, and you're gonna see crazy things just like you did in the internet. I mean, I remember when IBM first put a URL on their advert, and everyone was like, oh my god, somebody's actually recognized that the internet exists. It will probably have a couple of crashes, just like Bitcoin did. But the technology is there, and I think it will continue and endeavor to add value to the way we work and what we do in the world.
Do you think there's going to be a critical threshold moment where, for example, I don't know, Goldman Sachs puts out an NFT, or someone with, real institutional gravitas puts out an NFT, and then suddenly the whole space has got legitimacy? Or do you think that's not necessary?
I would be shocked if that doesn't happen at some point. I think it will probably, a bit like Bitcoin, it'll probably take a couple
sooner
of years
than we think.
For people to, I think it'll be faster than cryptocurrency. I think, we've already kind of established that, the naysayers at the beginning of cryptocurrency was like, oh, this wouldn't have worked. Yeah. I think we've established enough credibility that it won't take as long to establish that credibility in NFTs. But, I do think it will take a while before it's kind of like an accepted process. But once it is, it will be, it'll be like, how did we exist without NFTs? How do we exist before iTunes? It just doesn't make sense. My kids will be like, Daddy, did you, you had a what? You couldn't just press a button and you got the music you wanted. You had to get this physical thing and you put this tape. Can you imagine trying to explain to a kid these days the shit we had to go through? It was just like crazy.
But it's funny because there's so much. There's so much culture that developed. There was such an ecosystem that evolved around things like music and art, back in the day. And there was a lot of value to all that inefficiency. If you saw someone who wore a T-shirt of a band that was particularly rarefied or particularly hard to get, there was some real cultural capital involved in the acquisition of that signifier. And that's kind of lost in this digital age where you just click something and then you've got it and it takes no effort. I wonder what do you think is going to happen to that whole cultural ecosystem around, because it affected not just the consumption of art and culture, but also the production of it. Do you think
I certainly think you lose something that as I always say, it's the journey, not the destination. And I think the easier you make the journey, the less important the destination, So I do think as humanity, we lose something by making things too easy. Yeah. This comes to a bigger more ethereal type concept, is that are we becoming kind of micro machines within ourselves? Are we, are we losing what it means to be human because these devices are controlling us, not us controlling them? But that is a much longer talk for another time.
Now, so apropos of institutional acceptance, possibly the ultimate institutional acceptance is the IPO process. I wonder if you have any thoughts on the recent Coinbase IPO. Is that...
I mean, in a sense, I was kind of surprised that they IPO'd. It's kind of like the antithesis of the whole point of crypto. So I was kind of surprised that they went down that route. I think it added a lot of credibility to the market, which I think is a good thing. Mm-hmm. But I think the public markets are inherently inefficient. And mm-hmm. I think that's why crypto exists in its own right as well. So, it's kind of a weird thing for them to do, though I totally understand why they did it.
So have you seen, apropos of Bitcoin and Coinbase and crypto and digital assets generally, are you seeing a genuine sea change, or maybe hearing of a genuine sea change in institutional investor sentiment toward digital assets?
Yeah, I think it's still early stage. I think it's still in the back of the mind of most professionals or kind of enterprises or institutional investors that this is all still could be a fad, and there's mm-hmm. now the chances are it's less likely than a fad. But then they have a hard decision to make, because it's like, do they step out of this value cycle, or do they lean in? And each organization will make its own choices, its own risks, and ultimately succeed or fail based upon their choices. So it's hard. I mean, it's really hard. I mean, it's hard for anybody. In any new technology, there's always risk. But in life, risk equals reward. So those who adopt it earlier and get it right are probably going to succeed.
Now, if you can make a prediction by year end, what's the craziest digital asset issuance we're likely to see? worldwide? What do you think? Do you have an outrageous prediction to make about the digital asset space?
My view is that you're going to have some kind of correction in the market, which I think we're already starting to see now. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have some, I think you could, if the right people came together, I think you could, you could effectively, have one of the traditional auction houses or music labels or some other massive institution that nobody would expect, just staking their flag in the ground and saying, we're only NFTs now. Mm-hmm. I can see that happening. I think that, could a $1 billion company convert, completely to an NFT model? Yes. By the end of the year, yes, potentially.
Do you think that the significance would be an old line auction house, say, converting to NFT only, or will it be the emergence of an NFT startup that starts from from day one doing only NFTs
one of the traditional market makers going, this is the future.
Really? By year end, do you think? That's exciting.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, yeah. The market's moving. I tell you, one thing you learn in crypto is 1 week is 1 year.
One week is one year in crypto. All right. Yeah. That's moving at full speed ahead, let's say.
Indeed.
Benway, thank you so much for speaking with Investable Universe this week. This is fantastic.
It was a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That's all we got for Investable Universe this week. If you liked what you heard, share the link, check out the site at investableuniverse.com, or pitch us for future episodes. The address is editor@investableuniverse.com. My name is Rebecca Darst, and you'll hear more from me next time.